D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. We are live at Party Foul, just down the street from Vanderbilt, 2031 Broadway. Come on out, register to win a pair of 50-yard line seats to the sold-out game tomorrow at First Bank Stadium. We will unveil the winner at 5:45. You must be present to register. You don't have to be present to win. So at the very least, come on by, sign up for the tickets, and sign up for a chance to win an opportunity to go to the game tomorrow. Of course, College Game Day will be there from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Nate Bargatze, guest picker, Kenny Chesney and Dierks Bentley will perform. It'll be a great time. We will get back into the Vanderbilt conversation more in depth in a little bit. Although one texter, Eli from Smyrna, on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com said, here's how good the new Vanderbilt is. They are starting to flip Georgia quarterback commits that are five stars. He's referring to Jared Curtis from Nashville Christian, who is committed to Georgia but is going to attend the game tomorrow. Willie, you tell me Diego Pavia attended his game recently.
Yeah, that was in the in a recent report. Who put that out there? There was an article I read that had that in there.
I don't recall.
Yeah.
Well, but there's a photo of him. He was at that last game.
He was at their last game.
Yeah. Yes.
But I read I want to give the person credit who wrote the article and reported that, but they're a long way from actually getting him to flip. But you know how it is these days, D-Mace. You're committed and until you decide,
until you
can change your mind.
Decide you want to leave.
Supposedly this kid is good enough. He can go pretty much anywhere he wants. Mm-hmm. He committed, I think, last spring to Georgia. Nashville Christian, which is coached by a former classmate of mine, Jeff Brothers, who was a football player. He was a quarterback and safety at Vanderbilt. They won the state championship last year at Nashville Christian. And so this kid has a lot of tools. He's very sought after.
A couple of texters. The way Diego Pavia answered Paul Feinbaum's question about winning the national championship is how Big Joe Dubin wanted Mike Borgonzi to answer his questions about the Titans winning the Super Bowl.
He wanted to give a definitive answer.
Yes.
Can they win the Super Bowl? And Diego told you, yeah. We can win the national championship. That's what we are aiming toward.
Larry from Columbia says, don't you think Cam Ward has the same attitude as Diego Pavia? I guess I could see some similarities. The problem is that at least at the NFL level, there is no proof of concept for Cam Ward. And let's use that as a segue to discuss the Titans' upcoming matchup this Sunday at Indianapolis. The Colts are favored by 14.5, and I think that's being generous. I am preparing for a Colts beatdown.
So last week it was a curb stomp.
It was a curb stomp last
week. This week it's just a flat-out beatdown.
I don't know which one is worse, a beatdown or a curb stomp, but either way, I anticipate the Colts are just going to run through the Titans like a hot knife through butter. Jonathan Taylor, three games this season with three touchdowns. The Titans have six touchdowns as a team all season. No Jeffrey Simmons, no Calvin Ridley. Sorry, Restrepo fans. Mason Kinsey received the call-up from the practice squad, although Paul Kaharski did note that he doesn't expect the Titans to go into the Colts game with only four wide receivers, and he expects an elevation on Saturday. So keep hope alive, strep throaters. But Mason Kinsey got the call from the practice
what
squad.
What would happen if he catches the pass?
Restrepo or Kinsey?
No, Restrepo. Kinsey has caught some passes.
Yeah, he's caught passes.
But, like, if Restrepo catches a pass,
the tuba blow up, man.
I feel like something cosmic is going to happen. Yeah,
We'll see.
People are going to lose their minds.
Exactly.
Keep hope alive, Restrepo fans. But Mason Kinsey gets the call from the practice squad. But you look at the way the Colts are playing right now. The Colts have scored 232 points. They've punted 12 times in 7 games. 12 punts in 7 games. Those 232 points, the most scored through 7 games by the Colts in the Super Bowl era. And there have been some damn good Colts teams over the years. So my suggestion to Titans fans watching the game on Sunday, avert your gaze.
Well, you have to hope that the Colts are not on their A game. They've probably gotten to a level where they know how big of a favorite they are. This does happen sometimes. Mm-hmm. You coast and you allow a team to hang around that shouldn't. But the Colts have played beyond my wildest dreams. How could they? I never saw this coming. How well they are playing.
Well, I can say
nobody saw it coming. Did they?
I picked the Indianapolis.
Yes, you did.
Derek did pick the Colts to win the South.
There you go.
I teed it up for you.
Yeah, there you go. So I saw something. I ain't gonna lie and tell you what I saw.
But you didn't. You did not think he was gonna play this well.
No, I didn't think Daniel Jones would play this well. But I did look at that team from last year, and that's a good. The Colts. Here's the deal with the Colts. The Colts are always going to stay. Since Peyton Manning, they've always pretty much, outside the one season they were making a transition, they've found a way to stay relevant. They found a way to stay in the mix, maybe because the AFC South hasn't been as strong throughout the years. It hadn't been, competitive division in a long time where you got everybody in the division competing for that number one spot. It hadn't been that way in a long time. But what has been is this: Indianapolis has always been that team that no matter what, they've been able to stay relevant within the division. And now they're doing it as their players are maturing, those young players, and more importantly, those skilled players. Those skilled players are developing, and now they have a quarterback that has been through some systems, that have learned, that have sat back and watched, and he knows how to play winning football. Is he the best quarterback in the National Football League? Probably not. But he's playing like the best quarterback in the National Football League right now. But he knows how to use the weapons that he has. He knows how to win a game, but he understands that he has enough weapons around him, starting with Taylor, that he doesn't have to go out and win the games for them. He manages the game, don't do anything horrible, and allow those guys to go out and do what they do best.
Matt on our text line says, what is the deal with Xavier Restrepo? Why do people like him so much? Well, Xavier Restrepo was Cam Ward's teammate at Miami, had a successful college career. Correct me if I'm wrong, most receiving yards in Miami football history. He was there for a long time, though. We call that a compiler in the business. So a lot of receiving yards, but he was there for several years versus some of the other Miami receivers who didn't stay for very long because they didn't have to because they went to the NFL. And Xavier Restrepo was a fascination of a certain section of Titans fans in the offseason. He was an undrafted free agent. The Titans brought him in at Cam's behest, if I recall correctly. And there were Titans fans who thought that the connection the two of them had at Miami would translate to the NFL. Xavier Restrepo has been on the practice squad all season. Another team had an opportunity, many other teams, the entire NFL, had an opportunity to pluck him off the Titans practice squad when rosters were cut down. Nobody did. Mm-hmm. And with the injuries that have been decimating the Titans receiving room, starting with Calvin Ridley, Bryce Oliver also injured, those same Titans fans are hoping and wishing and praying that Xavier Restrepo will get his shot. Now Tyler Lockett's gone too. Remember, they cut bait on Tyler Lockett as well. Mm-hmm. So there's just this fascination with Xavier Restrepo. It wouldn't shock me if he got into a game at some point this season, maybe closer to the end of the season.
It wouldn't shock me either.
The way these wide receivers are hurt.
It wouldn't shock me either. But listen, this team has more problems than trying to, they got to figure out more things than trying to get Restrepo on the field. If, he wasn't You know, because they signed another wide receiver to the practice squad. That tells me that there's a potential that they may end up bringing Restrepo up. But it took all of that. It would have taken all of that for you to bring a guy up. It's unfortunate for him because that 4.7, 4.8, whatever he ran, will live with him forever. And it may hesitate. Some people would elevate him unless he just blows them out of the water. So I think the kid can play. I mean, he can't be no worse than what you've thrown out there already to me. So will he get an opportunity? I don't know. But this team is so far, they got so many problems. Them worrying about trying to elevate Restrepo, I mean, that's probably the last on or close to the last on the list of things they got to get accomplished. And I'm talking about for this game. I'm not even talking about for the season. I'm just talking about for this game. So can they, going back to, you know, Indianapolis being a heavy favorite, I was talking to someone. I was at the barbershop yesterday. You know barbershop talk. Yeah, that's how it is.
I'm very curious.
Exactly.
About this now.
So, you know, people, they start talking about what's happening with Chauncey Billups and all this other stuff and everything else. And we start talking about spreads. And this guy was like, well, this is why I don't, you know, make bets. And he was talking about some other stuff. But I said, listen, usually in the NFL, you don't get no more than probably a 6-7 point spread here and there. And that's big. Because this league, even with the bad teams, this league is built on parity. They want there to be parity across the board. That's why the worst teams get the first pick of the NBA, I mean the NFL draft. Why? Because we want to make sure that eventually you will become one of those middle teams that are fighting to make it to the playoffs, because it makes it interesting for everybody, for the fan base, for the league. So every fan base don't feel that they're out of it. So they purposely, these lines that are set is to get people. They're telling you this league is parity everywhere. So no matter if you're the Titans, you shouldn't lose by no more than 6 points. Well, you look up this weekend, it's a 14-point spread. What does that tell you? That tells you they ain't even the worst team. They're bad. A 14-point spread in the NFL game, you usually see that when there's a bunch of injuries, like quarterbacks out, starting running backs out, star wide receivers out, somebody on defense, okay, they're going to win by 14. Okay, I can get with that. You don't see a team that's pretty much fully healthy with the exception of a few guys, but they're key guys. But even before that, they still was a 14-point dog. Everybody thinks you are a really bad team. So how can a really bad team, with the guys that they're missing going into this week, beat a team that seems to be geared up to make a push for a long playoff run? How do a team like that beats this team? Well, how they do it is the other team falls asleep and they get up 14, 21 points. And all of a sudden, the pressure's on you. And you got to start doing things outside of what you normally do. You start to press. That is probably the only way that the Titans could legitimately win this game. That's me saying it. If they come in and they sleepwalk, because if they play like they did last game, they will get beat by 30 points. They will get beat. If they do what they did last week, the mistakes and everything, they will get beat by 30.
And that could happen. It's going to happen. If it doesn't happen Sunday, it's going to happen some the rest of the year just because they don't have the horses. But the key question, and I think Jason McCourty did a great job on our show laying this out, what this is like. But the goal, how do you get something out of this season? You got a coach who is probably a lame duck coach. When people are already saying who's doing the coaching search and stuff, if I'm Mike McCoy, I'm like, wait a minute, am I out? Do I even have a choice? What's the deal? You got a lame duck coach. You got players that understand the situation. You got lack of talent. So you've got to try to get, obviously, Cam Ward through. But DK and Io Manor and Helm and Gray, the guys that are going to be there over the next few years, you've got to get them through and get them something. Get them to a next level and survive. That is not easy when you're in this situation. When every week you're like, hey, do they have a chance of even not getting blown out? Like, that's not a good question to be asking every week. They got a lot of football to be played.
I know that Halloween is a week from today, but I think the game on Sunday could mirror your favorite horror movie. Pick one. Derek, I know you like scary movies.
Yes. This could be like...
What's your favorite scary movie?
My favorite scary movie? Man. I guess any, like, Conjuring or something like that.
But as Conjuring. You're watching...
So you got the serious scary.
Yeah,
right.
I'm like serious. See,
my first thought is Scream. I love Scream.
Screams are good,
Because it's funny and kind of scary.
Yeah.
But as you're watching those movies, sometimes you just want to watch through your fingers, right? That's how y'all should be watching the Titans game on Sunday. Right. I think it's going to be gory for the Tennessee Titans. It is not going to go well. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans matchup against the Colts. Again, the Colts favored by 14.5, which is just crazy to say in the NFL. 615-737-1025. Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans as well as Vanderbilt's matchup against Missouri tomorrow. Chad Withrow joins us next, 615-737-1025. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick is presented by Bax Homeworks. Financing options are available to make your remodel easier than you think. With Bax Homeworks, get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you live at Party Foul, 2031 Broadway, just down the road from Vanderbilt, where the Commodores will take on the Missouri Tigers tomorrow afternoon. We are pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, by our friend Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. And Chad, let's start with the matchup that we are all anticipating, Missouri at Vanderbilt. I started the show by saying that this is a huge opportunity for Vanderbilt, not just on the field, but off the field as well. College game day is here for the first time in 17 years. There's a lot of buzz about Vanderbilt in the college football world. But I would say to the general slash casual sports fan, the Commodores are a curiosity. But I think if they put on a great performance tomorrow, considering how much attention is going to be on this game, they will graduate from curiosity to Nashville's newest darlings. Do you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's a testament to how good and consistent this team has been this year that so many people just believe, hey, Vandy's going to do to Missouri what they did to LSU a week ago, which is really kind of physically dominate the game. I mean, you look up front what Vandy was able to do to LSU running the ball, outrushed them by almost 200 yards in that game. It was a beatdown. Even though it was a seven-point game, it was a beatdown for Vanderbilt. And I don't know that this game's going to be a beatdown, but I think it's going to feel a lot like the LSU game where you look up and Vandy wins by a touchdown, maybe 4 or 5 points, but it feels like they controlled the game and they got done what they wanted to get done. That's the way I feel about the matchup. For the opportunity on a national stage, it's huge. I was a little surprised that this is going to be an ESPN game and not an ABC game. I thought that it would at least be in that trifecta of games on ESPN and option into that one. But to have College game day there and to have an environment where Nate Bargatze is going to be the celebrity guest picker. I saw Dierks Bentley and Kenny Chesney are both performing. It's going to put Nashville in a spotlight, and associating this city with how hot it is right now with this program and how hot it is right now is only going to help Vandy. And keep in mind, guys, Jared Curtis, who is in some services the number one quarterback in the country, is visiting tomorrow now, which is big news. He's been committed to Georgia for a while, the Nashville Christian product, and he's going to be at this game as an official visitor with Vanderbilt. So, yeah, it's a great time to be a door right now, and they got a huge opportunity tomorrow to really show off all the positive aspects of this program that Clark Lee has built.
Diego Pavia at the moment on ESPN Bet has the fourth best odds of winning the Heisman Trophy. He's behind Fernando Mendoza at Indiana, Ty Simpson at Alabama, and Julian Sayin at Ohio State. What more must Pavia do to receive an invite to the Heisman Trophy ceremony later this year?
I think he has to really shine in two of the following three games. Tomorrow against Missouri, at Texas, at Tennessee. If he plays heroically in those games and puts up big numbers, he's going to have a great shot. He will be in New York as a guest of the Heisman Trophy. He would have a great shot of winning the Heisman Trophy if that happens. Because keep in mind, he's really 1-for-2 in spotlight games. He did not play well at all at Alabama, and those turnovers cost Vanderbilt the game. And then he looked great against LSU, and he made some highlight-type plays that we've become – it's expected with Diego Pavia that he's going to face-plant some guy that's rushing him and spin out and find someone wide open down the field. That's what he did in that LSU game. If he has performances like LSU a week ago, tomorrow against Missouri, at Texas, and at Tennessee, even if two of the three are big-time performances, because there's not a lot of greatness going on around him also, guys, I think he's going to have a great shot to win the Heisman Trophy. But, again, it starts this final stretch tomorrow against Missouri. He needs to have a big game and shine with the national spotlight on him.
Now, Chad, what do you think of Missouri? Because, once again, they're going up against a team that it's giving up less than 20 points a game. Last week it was LSU with 11 points a game, and they beat LSU and scored 30 points. 30-plus points to get them, and now you have Missouri, whose defense has only given up 16 points. What do you make of Missouri? Because they run the ball very well, but they don't do as much in the passing game.
Yeah, I was really curious, D-Mace, to see them a week ago at Auburn, because that was their first game away from Columbia, and they didn't look great. You know, Auburn's feisty, and they've got a good defense. They don't have a good offense, but Missouri found a way to win in overtime, which is all you're trying to do in the SEC. You know, you're not going to sneeze at any win. If it's in overtime or whatever it is, especially on the road. So they got the job done last week. Against Alabama, I was impressed that they sacked Ty Simpson five times. I was really blown away because I haven't watched a ton of them this year. I watched a lot of them against Kansas. I watched a lot of the Alabama game. I didn't see a lot of the Auburn game last week. But what jumps out to me is their athleticism across their defensive front. They got some dudes up front that can get to the quarterback. Can those guys contain Diego Pavia? Can they stay in a rush lane and make Pavia beat Missouri with a more precise throwing game? I think that's always the goal when you go against this Tim Beck offense with Diego Pavia. But Vandy does such a good job offensively of misdirection, of faking the jet sweep, of getting you off balance and playing on your heels, that they sort of dictate what they want to do offensively. So I've been impressed with Missouri. I don't think they're one of the best teams in the SEC. But when you look at that top 8 to 10 group, there's not a lot of separation between any of them. And I throw Missouri right in that mix of the top 8 to 10 in this conference where, you know, it wouldn't shock you if number 10, who I think right now is either Tennessee or Florida, they could beat number 1 at any time, and it wouldn't surprise anybody. That's the way I feel about Missouri.
Now, we know that Missouri runs the ball very effectively. They got three runners that are, you know, per carry averaging over 6 yards per carry or close to 6 yards. I think the last back he averaged 5.9 yards per carry. So they run the ball very effectively. But on the other side, Vandy has given up a lot against the run. You saw what they couldn't do against Alabama. Alabama was able to run the ball very effectively on them. So what can Vandy do to stop Missouri's? Because that's the only way I think Missouri stays in this and makes it a competitive game to the end.
Yeah, and to do what LSU couldn't do and can't do this year, right? I mean, that was the key in Vandy's win last week. LSU can't run the football. So teams that can't run the ball, Vandy's going to have a lot of success against them. And you're right, that's not Missouri. They've run it really well. Again, I would add, you know, their season really started with Alabama. You know, they had so many home games front-loaded. Their toughest game was Kansas, which they had to come back and escape that one at home. So starting with that Alabama game, then going to Auburn last week, that run game hasn't been the same against Alabama and Auburn's defense. I think Vandy, athletically on defense, they got some dudes too. So I think they're going to have a good chance to slow down that Missouri game. I also think this this could be a pretty low scoring game. You know, I know it was low scoring on the Plains with Missouri and Auburn last week. I think it was, what, 31-24 Vandy won against Missouri. I think this game could be played in the upper teens, low 20s with both of these teams. So that's one I'm going to watch. Can Vandy stop the run again against a team that wants to run it and is good at it? Because that's not LSU's strength.
Chad Withrow is with us. Adam, correct me if I'm wrong before I ask Chad this question. Missouri is, like Vanderbilt, a team that has a high level of time of possession, correct?
Missouri is fourth in the nation in time of possession. Vanderbilt is
27th. Chad, I was shocked to see that. I did not realize that about Missouri. So to your point about what kind of game this is going to be, we know Vanderbilt likes to play a low possession game. They like to eat the clock. You notice that there are plenty of plays where the clock is literally at 1 second. They're ready to snap the ball with 5 or 6 seconds, but they let it go down to one because they want to just milk so much of the clock. So I wonder how it goes. You have to make the most of every possession, which is the key to Vanderbilt's success, is they're cashing in with points when they do that. But there's not much margin for error in a lower possession game. But it seems like Missouri wants to play that like that too.
Yeah, both are very comfortable. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, Willie, that they both want to do this, right? They want to drag the game down in the mud. They want to slow it up. They want to keep their offense on the field. Both have good offensive lines. I think Vandy's got a great offensive line. And the way they flip the sides and do all that keeps teams off balance. But, yeah, both teams want to have high time of possession. They want the defense to stay out there, which could certainly lead to a low-scoring game. You know, what I don't think is going to happen to Missouri in this game, let's say Vandy's playing an Ole Miss or a Tennessee that likes to play tempo, that likes to score fast, that likes to get moving up and down the field. Those types of teams, I think, can get quickly frustrated with a team that holds the ball for a long time, and they can start to press. And when you do that, you make mistakes. That's not going to be Missouri in this game because they want to do exactly what Vanderbilt wants to do. They want to take it down to, you know, 3, 2, or 1 on the play clock and hold on to the ball as long as possible. But it's one of those crazy games where you punt once and you back a team up. Well, if they start marching on a drive, you look up and 9 minutes are off the clock, right? Like the first quarter's over before you know it. And it really shortens the game when you can do that. So, yeah, I would not be surprised at all if, much like the Auburn-Missouri game this past week, if this is going to be a really low-scoring game tomorrow.
I'm curious your perspective on the pulse of the Tennessee fans here. We know, you know, the nature of the rivalry between Tennessee and Vanderbilt, but also the dynamic of Tennessee would love to get as many quality wins as they can. And so the weight of a win over Vanderbilt in the last week will be that much more if Vanderbilt is still in the picture by then. And, you know, if Vanderbilt lost another couple of games, that would take away from the magnitude of that game. So what do Tennessee fans think as they observe Vanderbilt, Missouri?
They're Vandy fans for this week. I really believe that. I mean, if you're a Tennessee fan, you are all black and gold and not the Missouri black and gold. I'm talking anchor down black and gold this week because you get a chance at home against Vandy, right? You don't play Missouri this year. Missouri doesn't have a very difficult schedule after this also. So you really need Missouri to get that second loss against Vandy because you still have a chance in front of you to take care of business and beat Vandy at home if you're Tennessee. But I'm looking at Tennessee's schedule, and I could very easily see a loss or two ahead of the Vandy game. I mean, what if it's the inverse of a year ago where it's Vandy walking in with two losses the last game of the season, and they're playing Tennessee with a chance to play spoiler and knock them out of the playoff? And there's a lot of possibilities. That's a long way off.
Yeah, there's a lot of football to be played. No question.
You're talking to Coach Willie right now.
Coach Willie, yeah, clear. Definitely taking it week to week.
Willie, I've seen Peter Burns and everyone like, oh, please, God, let Tennessee Vandy be for a playoff play-in game. Please let that game matter to that extent. And I'm thinking it is over a month away. Who knows what both teams are going to look like by then. But I do see a conceivable scenario where Tennessee's having to play spoiler or trying to play spoiler with them having no chance of the playoff, and Vandy in a win-and-end scenario, much like here in Nashville a year ago where Tennessee came in and Vandy had a chance to play spoiler. But I think Tennessee fans, you know, they're looking at last week, just the temperature, and they're looking at that Bama game, and I think it's just more anger because Tennessee shot themselves in the foot repeatedly Statistically and watching that game, I don't think Bama's any better than Tennessee. I think Tennessee got a safety because they tripped over their offensive lineman after an offensive pass interference penalty, and they had a 14-point swing or a 10-point swing at the end of the first half, and that's your ball game. And that's really the difference in the game. So I think both Tennessee and Vandy, if you're looking at the, you know, the similar opponent, look at that Alabama game and probably both kind of feel the same way about their chances against them.
Yeah, Coach Willie's cautionary tale. I think we could all remember 10 or 12 years ago, Dak Prescott and I can't remember the quarterback for Ole Miss, but Ole Miss and Mississippi State were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, like number one and number two or number two and number three. And 3 or 4 weeks later, they were both, you know, playing in the Citrus Bowl or the, you know, they were both out of the national title picture, even though it was a great story in late October, right? So we got a lot of the season to be played. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and look, you don't have to go that far back. You know, just looking here in this state, 2022, Tennessee is the number one ranked team in the first college football playoff ranking. They go to Columbia, South Carolina at night as like an 18-point favorite. And they give up 63 points and get absolutely shellacked in a game where Hendon Hooker gets injured, right? Remember, they wore the orange helmets, which have never been seen since. They ditched those orange helmets, gave them to a high school somewhere, and you will never see Tennessee in orange helmets again because of the way they played that night. So things, I say that to say, especially now in this SEC, things can change quickly. Like, there's not a single team on the schedule for any of these teams that you look at and say, oh, that's an easy win. That's not going to be hard at all. I mean, there's a lot of these games that can come down to a coin toss in the fourth quarter.
Chad Withrow.
Okay, I got one more quick one for Chad.
Okay,
I have to ask Chad about the Tony Vitello story. Chad, from where I sit, this is one of the most out-of-nowhere things, just because what I know about professional baseball and the day-to-day life, the mentality of a pro baseball player, a major league player, as compared to Tony Vitello's style as a college coach, I'm really curious how that is going to play out. So were you as surprised as I was to hear about that?
I was shocked. I was shocked. When the time went on with this thing and they hadn't hired a manager and you stopped hearing Tony Vitello's name, I just thought, well, you know, that's just common sense that a guy who had zero professional experience wouldn't get looked at for that job. And then the news breaks on Saturday that he's the target for the Giants. And I was shocked, Willie. I mean, it's completely unprecedented. It's never happened. We've had college coaches hired that had, you know, 10 years prior bench coach experience for a major league team or that had a prior relationship with that major league team. We've never had a guy with no experience in the pros get a major league baseball managerial position, especially at a place in a franchise like the San Francisco Giants. So I tip my hat to Tony Vitello. I'm honestly surprised it took him that long to take the job. I think it's kind of a no-brainer. I think you sort of need to do it also if you want to trailblaze and open the door maybe for future college coaches to get an opportunity if he goes there and does well, where they can make the move up also. And, you know, the impact Tony Vitello made on that program and on the entire athletic department, it's immeasurable. I mean, he was sending videos, you know, giving pep talks to Little League teams if people ask. He was showing up and reading to elementary schools. His charisma is what sort of wins the day here. And I think it's that charisma that got him this unprecedented opportunity to go straight from college to Major League Baseball. But like you, Willie, I'm stunned. I have no clue how it's going to play out in the majors. But I'll tell you this, it's not going to be boring. That's
nope.
For sure. They are going to be very different. I could see them having a totally different personality and mindset from every other major league team. So this thing could crash and burn in a year or two, or they could be the most exciting team in all of baseball.
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. He joins us every Friday afternoon. Chad, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
It's a big weekend, boys. Excited for it. Thanks for having me on. We'll talk next week.
Always Absolutely. A pleasure to chat with Chad Withrow. 615-737-1025. I want to sneak in a quick Predators thought here after the Predators won last night 2-1 against the Vancouver Canucks, because I have a question for a certain section of the Predators fan base. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. We are live at Party Foul, 2031 Broadway, just down the road from Vanderbilt's campus. Stop by and register for a pair of 50-yard line seats to the sold-out game tomorrow. You must be present to register. You do not have to be present to win. So at the very least, stop on by 2031 Broadway and sign up to win a pair of tickets to see Missouri take on Vanderbilt tomorrow. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan.
Solid choice right here.
Yeah, man. Can't go wrong with that.
We're going to call Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
You have 1 hour to come to Party Foul, 2031 Broadway, where Midtown meets Vanderbilt's campus, thereabouts.
Yeah. Broadway and 21st.
Broadway and 21st. So 2031 Broadway. If you want a pair of tickets to the game tomorrow, Missouri at Vanderbilt, come to 2031 Broadway, register to win. You don't have to be present to win. So as long as you stop by and fill out an entry form, that's all you have to do. You do not have to stick around until the end of the show, although we encourage you do. And at 5:45, we will draw the winner. So you have roughly an hour to come on down here, 2031 Broadway, at Party Foul, and sign up for a chance to win tickets to see Vanderbilt play Missouri tomorrow at First Bank Stadium.
There's free parking next door, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, there is.
So you don't have to worry about parking.
Two-hour validation.
Yes.
That's
yes.
big around here.
That is big.
That is big around here.
30 minutes is big. Anything you can get around
2 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Covered.
Like
2 hours, yeah. That's a luxury in Nashville. Before we get back to Vanderbilt, Missouri, I do want to sneak in a quick Predators thought. The Predators won last night 2-1 against the Vancouver Canucks. Game two of the five-game homestand. That homestand continues tomorrow and Sunday at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators will take on the LA Kings tomorrow and the Dallas Stars on Sunday before wrapping up the homestand on Tuesday against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But here is my question. And to the texter who tried to guess what I was going to ask and said, no, Adam, we still don't have any faith in the coach. My question isn't about Andrew Brunette. My question is about UC Saros. UC Saros last night played well, to say the least. Yet another steal for UC Saros. So the Predators have won three games this season. And UC Saros, statistically, has stolen two of them. Which is a fancy way of saying that UC Saros is directly responsible for two of the Predators' three wins this season. So my question for all of you UC Saros skeptics out there, and I know there are a lot of you, how are you feeling about his performance so far this season? Because there was a lot of pressure on UC Saros when the season started, as his new contract started. Last season was the worst season of his career. A lot of you still wish that the Predators traded UC Saros instead of having traded Yaroslav Askarov. Though, have you taken a look at Yaroslav Askarov's statistics with the San Jose Sharks this season? A 5.72 goals against average and 8.38 save percentage. And his career numbers, as Willie points out, not great either. I know the Sharks are not a great team, but I digress.
But the environment has a lot to do with your success. And Askarov, that's part of the deal.
Yes. So UC Saros,
I don't know if there is a goalie on the planet that could be successful for them right now.
Well, they need, what, 5 points from Macklin Celebrini last night to beat
yes.
the Rangers? Saros is 3-2-2 with a 2.53 goals against average and 9.11 save percentage this season. The Predators can't score goals. They've been held to two or fewer goals in six of the first eight games, because they've only played eight games. Two or fewer goals in six of the eight games. They are 30th in the league in scoring per game. And yet UC Saros has given the Predators a chance to win on most nights. So UC Saros skeptics, how are you feeling about his performance? Willie, what did you make of Saros last night?
Well, Saros was excellent last night, and I think it's, and I've been saying this all along, it's really not Saros that is going to be the issue. Mm-hmm. I'm confident that Saros will do what he does if you give him a chance, and that's what they're really trying to do, and they've been able to do it more often than not. They've played eight games. Mm-hmm. In five of the eight, the Predators have had a 2-1 lead in the third period at one point in the game, which I think is a pretty interesting stat. Now, the problem is they're not finding a way to get that third goal to put the game away. which they have got to start doing. Like, that's, we don't have time to get into that, but it's obvious they've got to find more ways to score. The power play has been abysmal. They've got to figure that out. But what they've done, and they haven't even gotten Nick Hague back, which should help them also defend in front of Saros. He's not going to provide any offense, but he also can fortify what they're doing defensively. He should be back in the next few days, according to what Barry Trotz told us on Tuesday. But if they give Saros a chance, I think he will keep them in the game. He's not going to hold them to one goal every night, but I think he's going to do his job if they can stay confident in that structure.
I think he played the way, last night, the way that we have seen him or accustomed to him playing. Stealing some goals, you know, being pressured at the net and holding up. They did a good job on the power power play, the kill of the power play.
The penalty kill.
The penalty kill, excuse me. They did a great job. UC had some terrific saves in that span. So he's playing, and I know he's had some, you know, he's had his mishaps this season as well. But he's played closer to what we are used to him playing than not. That game last night, you can say he won that game for him.
He did.
You know?
Statistically,
exactly.
He won the game for
him. And Tuesday was the exact opposite. Tuesday looked like last year's team.
Yes.
Where they got loose in the coverage. Mm-hmm. They had turnovers that led to two-on-ones, breakaways, and there were too many of them. And a skilled team like the Ducks, they broke the game down in the second half of the game. So I think that's going to be the question all year long for the Predators as it relates to Saros. I think Saros will be fine if they can keep the environment in front of him stable. Then the next question is, will they be able to generate enough offense to win enough games if they can do that? These are things that have to come together. They're 3-3-2. There's still a lot of questions out there.
One texter says, a goaltender at an elite caliber should steal you a third of your games because of his ability. Your goaltender is normally the best player on the ice. Well, they have 3 wins. And Saros has stolen 2 of them, so that's 2/3.
Yeah, there
so
you go.
We'll see. The offense is a gigantic issue. Again, the Predators have scored 2 or fewer goals in 6 of 8 games. And, Willie, as we pointed out the other day, the 2 games where the Predators scored more than 2 goals, one was the win in Ottawa, where the Predators had 2 empty net goals, and then the other game was in Toronto the next night, with some late goals when the game was more or less out of hand.
They got down 5-2, made it 5-3. They gave up an empty net goal. Then they scored another goal to get down 6-4. But they were chasing the game at that point. They need more goals early. They have 3 first-period goals in 8 games. So they've got to find that extra goal. Power play is obvious. They've got to get that fixed. And I wonder at one point, you know, will they try something drastic, break up the 5 guys that normally are out there? Or, you know, I've seen coaches do different things, right? I've seen people go as far as to throw the 4th liners out there. And Terry Crisp used to have some funny stories about that where he would say, hey, you guys, the 4th liners, get out there. You guys can do better. And then he realizes about 30 seconds in, maybe that wasn't a good idea. These guys are not goal scorers for a reason. But They have to try something. They've got to shake it up. They need better results on the power play, and they're going to face a couple of very good teams on Saturday and Sunday, which is why last night's game, you know, Coach Willie doesn't talk about must wins in October, but that was an urgent need for a win last night as any game that you will see in an October. That team really needed to win that game last night.
Yeah, I think if anything, you know, so you won't even get to a point where the morale is now starting to be tested with the team this early in the season. I guess the question that I want to ask both of you, and maybe you can answer it on the other side, how did it get this way? Like, how did this team go from, they could score, to not being able to score goals in the last 2 seasons? It's just, it's like all of a sudden this team, because even when they started to make the sales and that game, the team kind of responded in a good way, they were scoring goals. And then all of a sudden the next season, it just all went to hell in a handbasket.
615-737-1025. We'll take your Predators' thoughts. UC Saros skeptics, how are you feeling about his performance so far? The Predators have three wins. UC Saros has stolen two of them. We'll also answer Derek's question quickly on the other side. We will get back into Vanderbilt's matchup against Missouri as well. 615-737-1025. We'll lead on it. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.